Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get into our show, we're hoping you can give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show, and thanks to those of you who've already done it. Here's a little more incentive to encourage you to do so. You can win a signed copy of my book, John Turner, An Intimate Biography of Canada's 17th Prime Minister. Let us know that you've left a rating or review by sending us a screenshot of it at onpolitics@tvo.org, and you'll be entered into our podcast sweepstakes. We'll announce the winner at the end of June. Best of luck. Welcome, everyone, to the On Poly podcast. I'm Steve Paikin.
And I'm John Michael McGrath.
Today on the pod, Peel Region is finally getting a divorce. Will the Eglinton Crosstown LRT ever be finished?
It's Tuesday, May 23rd, 2023, so let's get to it.
Hey, partner, we normally record this podcast on Monday afternoons and get it out first thing Tuesday morning, but given that Monday of this week was the Victoria Day holiday, we're actually recording this Friday afternoon and crossing our fingers and toes that events will not have caused this to be out of date by the time you hear it. I am somewhere north of Parry Sound at the moment, en route to cottage country, and where have we found you on this fine day?
I am at TVO headquarters in Toronto, just holding down the fort here, but in a nod to the impending long weekend, I am just in shorts and a t-shirt.
Very good. Okay. Well, I'm glad you're comfortable. We are fighting not too much traffic on the way up north, so things are A-OK here. Let's get to the mailbag. We do enjoy getting your feedback. Once again, that email address to get us, onpolitics@tvo.org. JMM, what have we got up this week?
We've got an email from listener Brian, who writes, I have a historical geekery question that might be right up your alley. On a recent trip to the capital of Quebec, I noticed a lot of recognition paid to past premiers and other political leaders, notably major roadways named after, for example, René Lévesque, Robert Bourassa, Maurice Duplessis, and Jean Charest. I am not aware of similar recognition being paid to past Ontario premiers beyond the naming of a few buildings of long past premiers in the Queen's Park complex. For example, there is no John Robarts Avenue, nor a Mike Harris Road, Bob Ray Street, David Peterson Boulevard. Notably absent is a Bill Davis Expressway. Am I missing something? Shall we start a campaign to rename Highway 401 after Bill Davis? Thanks, Brian.
Okay, this is a very interesting observation. And having just been in Montreal a couple of weekends ago, I can tell you that, yes, I too saw all those street names or subway station names all named after major historic figures in the province of Quebec. For whatever reason, we just don't do that here. We just don't. In fact, there is a major highway, of course, north of Toronto that goes all across the province. This is the Highway 401. Technically, it actually was named after two politicians. It's technically called the Macdonald-Cartier Freeway, named after two fathers of Confederation, Sir John A. Macdonald and Georges-Étienne Cartier. But no one ever calls it that, and I don't think anyone ever has called it that. Speaking of federal leaders, we do have Lester Pearson Airport in Toronto, but in terms of things named after premiers, here's a bit of a list. No roadways here, but it's a bit of a list. There was a natural resources center in central Ontario in Haliburton named after Leslie Frost, but it was closed almost 20 years ago. There's a research institute at Western University named after John Robarts, and of course one of the biggest libraries in the world named after Robarts at U of T. There are a few things named after Bill Davis. There's a walking trail near Ontario Place named after him, and interestingly enough, it was Liberal Premier Kathleen Wynne who named that trail after the former Conservative Premier. There's also a high school football field in Brampton named after Mr. Davis, and a lounge at OISE, the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education, named after him because he created it when he was colleges and universities minister. And the studio where I shoot The Agenda is named after Bill Davis because he created TVO 50 plus years ago when he was education minister. I'm scratching my head here. Has anything been named after Frank Miller or David Peterson or Bob Ray or Mike Harris or Ernie Eves or Dalton McGuinty or Kathleen Wynne, as in a big piece of infrastructure? Truth be told, JMM, I can't think of anything. If anyone knows any, send us an email at onpolitics@tvo.org. Can you think of anything off the top of your head?
Honestly, Steve, I don't. I mean, in preparation for this podcast, I Googled some stuff. I was checking Wikipedia pages. But it is just one of those distinctions that we don't seem to name big infrastructure projects after politicians. You mentioned Windsor. I'm thinking of the new bridge that's being built to link Windsor and Detroit is being named after Gordie Howe. And the off-ramp complex of highways and tunnels that is going to connect that bridge to the 401 is being named after Herb Gray, the very long-serving federal MP. That's the closest that I can think of in terms of an Ontario case, but certainly nothing named after former premiers. All right, with that, now on to issue one.
Decades of lobbying, cajoling, and arm twisting have finally paid off for the city of Mississauga, Ontario's third largest city by population, behind Toronto and Ottawa. The provincial government has introduced legislation which would begin the process of dissolving a region created by the Bill Davis government 50 years ago. JMM, why don't you take us through some of the detail of how this divorce is going to proceed?
Minister of Municipal Affairs Steve Clark has introduced Bill 112, the Hazel McCallion Act. So if anybody wanted a symbol of which late politician is really responsible for what we're seeing this week, it says so right on the label. The province is going to create a transition board of five people named by Steve Clark to address any of the issues related to the restructuring of Peel Region. The board is intended to ensure an amicable and fair dissolution process that, in the government's words, respects taxpayers and protects existing services. Now, this is extremely complex. There are obviously a lot of issues to wade through. Something like 7,000 people work for Peel Region as distinct from the lower tier municipalities, and we don't know what is necessarily going to happen to them, which bylaws will remain and which will be wound up, which city will do what services going forward. Will property tax, either property tax levels or property tax policies need to change? And who will serve on various municipal agencies, boards, and commissions? Which of those agencies will be retained? Some of those may be wound down. It's obviously complicated. The province has given themselves a target date for the dissolution of January 1st, 2025. They do expect to have to introduce supplemental legislation sometime next year in 2024 just to settle out any further legislative matters that can't be handled by the municipalities themselves, just in case it's not obvious to some of our listeners. But, you know, this goes back to municipalities being a creature of the province. Really, it has to be the legislature and the government that handles this because, of course, the region of Peel was created by the legislature. It can only be uncreated by the legislature.
Right. And you know, this would give almost 2 years before the October 2026 municipal elections. So again, if all goes according to Hoyle, that's plenty of time for the new single-tier governments to get their lives all figured out, and the public can then render a judgment on all of that. Now, most significantly, the province expects local services to continue uninterrupted, with no impact on residents. Understandably, people who live in Mississauga, Brampton, or Caledon are wondering what this means for their public services. Policing, for example, is a regional service. The school system is a regional service. Water purification is a regional service. Obviously, all this needs to be negotiated, but do we have any sense of how all of this is ultimately going to be worked out?
You know, we don't know at this instant what the final settlement will be, but we're also not exactly splitting the atom for the first time here either. Lots of municipalities have agreements with their neighbors to share services or infrastructure. One of the most obvious examples for us here in Toronto is the TTC subway line into York Region, for which York Region pays a share of operations and helped fund the construction of. They're certainly grumbling about how that share was determined and whether, for example, Toronto gets the money that fairly reflects the costs of operating the subway. But in principle, this isn't a new problem to solve.
Now, in the past, there have been two competing studies done on this issue by two of the bigger consulting firms in Ontario, EY and Deloitte. Mississauga commissioned one, Brampton commissioned the other, and surprise, surprise, they said different things about who'd come out ahead if Peel were dissolved. and both mayors used both of those studies to lobby the province to getting them what they wanted. I'm not sure how useful those studies are going to be anymore since they're a few years old, but I guess essentially the negotiations between the municipalities begin now and we just see where they go.
Right. And I think one thing to keep in mind in all of this is that the province's interest is going to be the one that ends up determining the final disposition. This transition board is going to make recommendations to Minister Steve Clark. He will bring those recommendations to cabinet, but it is going to be cabinet that makes the decision. And if I can sum up the government's philosophy in a sentence, it would be, sort it out among yourselves, but we are not paying 1 cent more. And this, I think, really gets to the big question for our listeners who live in what is still Peel Region. What will change in their lives because of this? And honestly, I'm not sure the answer is very much at all. The new single-tier municipalities are still going to need to do all of the same work that the combined regional and local municipalities currently do. It's just going to be organized differently. I don't think it's going to have a huge effect on, for example, property taxes, especially if policing and transit are unaffected, which they could very well end up being.
Now, understandably, Mississauga and Brampton, with a combined population of almost 1.5 million residents, they have captured most of the attention here. But let's not forget Little Caledon. And I can tell you that the mayor, Annette Groves, was on the agenda last week, and she said her first choice was the status quo. She likes things the way they are. Obviously, that's not on anymore. Her second choice was having Caledon join York Region, where, unlike in Peel, there are many other local municipalities of a similar size to Caledon, so they might be much happier in York if, in fact, that were to happen. Now, there was some opposition reaction to this in the legislature last Thursday, the day this was all announced, so let's hear some of that. Here's official opposition leader Marit Stiles on the lack of faith she has in the government's ability to negotiate this divorce fairly.
How can Peel residents have any confidence in this restructuring process when the Premier and the Minister have shown them such disrespect?
Having said that, Municipal Affairs Minister Steve Clark reminded the opposition of another political reality.
You know one thing that the Leader of the Opposition didn't talk about? The results of last year's election.
And I wonder why.
She mentioned that now. Right now, all of those seats in Peel Region are government seats.
Yep.
While it's true the Tories have all the seats in Peel Region, that is both a blessing and a bit of a curse, because if they don't get the balance of this divorce right, some of those seats could be in jeopardy next time people go to the polls in 2026, just a few months before the October election in that year.
Indeed. Now, this may not be the end of the regional government reorganization story. The province also announced that they intend to name what they're calling regional facilitators in other regions. Durham, Halton, Niagara, Simcoe, Waterloo, and York. So you never know. This could be the first regional government domino to fall in Peel. Stay tuned. We'll see.
Before we move on, I did have one other thing I wanted to add. We have mostly stopped doing quotes of the week on this podcast, but I couldn't close this segment without giving some kind of award or distinction to Caledon Mayor Annette Groves, who had, I think, the winning quote of Thursday afternoon's press conference at Queen's Park.
I had a great divorce. I didn't even use a lawyer. And my ex-husband comes and lets my dog out and takes my garbage out. What more can you ask for? So I think that this is the kind of divorce we're going to have here in Peel Region. So thank you.
Very good. Well said, and well worth reminding our listeners of our former tradition of the quote of note, because that's a good one. And on to issue two. Well, here we go again. I guess this shouldn't come as any surprise, but it's got to be maddeningly frustrating for all involved, not to mention prospective LRT riders, that the Eglinton Crosstown is in suspended animation yet again. The light rail transit line, which was supposed to have been opened almost 2 years ago, is once again stuck in the mud as the private sector consortium is going to court seeking the right not to finish the project. JMM, what in heaven's name is going on here?
So this involves the company Crosslinks Transit Solutions, which is a consortium of construction companies that won the bid to build the Eglinton Crosstown. It has sued to stop working with the Toronto Transit Commission. Formally speaking, the TTC is not actually a party to any of the contracts here, except that it is supposed to sort of take over operations of the Crosstown once it's complete. Crosslinks says they've been getting basically change orders and detail changes from the TTC that are becoming impossible to accommodate. There is a long history now of disruptions. The government says, hey, this isn't our deal. We inherited this from the Liberals who put all of the contracts together. At the same time, the government has been in power for almost 5 years now. They're coming up on that anniversary, actually. It seems like plenty of time to oversee what needs doing and to ensure that targets are being met. It is still the government's job to oversee these kinds of operations. You know, just to give people a sense of the scope of what we're talking about, when the Crosstown was initially proposed, gosh, we're coming up on 15 years ago, you know, they were talking about it being maybe a $5 billion project. And between changes to the project design and other things, it is now approaching $13 billion. Not the first time we've seen cost overruns in these kinds of projects. Probably not the last. Distressing, nevertheless.
Yeah, the private sector consortium is not completely without merit in its concerns here, in as much as, you know, what this project looked like when it started and what it looks like now are very different. And in fact, people in politics have demanded changes. You know, initially in the west end of this thing, it was all supposed to be surface LRT. Then the Doug Ford government got elected. Doug Ford realized part of this was going to be in his riding, and he decided he wanted that part of it underground. Okay, when you grow underground, you never know what you're going to find. You might find 100-year-old sewer pipes in there, and all of those change orders have to be accommodated. So we do have to allow for the possibility that the private sector consortium isn't completely wet here when it says it's trying to keep up with all of the changes it wants. Furthermore, we have seen a couple of Toronto City councillors and the MPP for St. Paul's, which, of course, is right where the middle of the LRT is. That's Jill Andrew of the NDP. They've all come out and demanded a public inquiry into how this project got, if you'll forgive the expression, so off the rails. John Michael, any chance at all of a public inquiry happening here?
There is no indication that the government is interested in pursuing that option. If they really believe that the previous government messed this up so badly, you would think that it would be an easy win for the government to call an inquiry, because the conclusions would all make the Liberals look bad and not the Tories. The lack of interest in doing so suggests maybe that this isn't entirely the fault of the previous government, that maybe there have been some mistakes in the 5 years that Doug Ford has been premier. Maybe there's more culpability there than they are suggesting. You know, but one of the larger problems with this model has been that there are so few companies in Canada that can do this work. It is hard to fire the members of these consortiums or discipline them in any sort of enduring way for their share of this mess. You know, if the province or Metrolinx did just say, okay, you guys obviously can't complete this, you are fired, we are breaking the contract. First of all, of course, it would just start a massive onslaught of lawsuits, and it's unclear whether or how that would end. And then you have the question of, like, could international companies realistically be able to come into the project halfway and finish another company's work?
Yeah, very problematic. And it's really a shame, because Eglinton Avenue in Toronto has been ripped up for more than half a decade now. And, you know, spare a kind thought for all the businesses along that street whose livelihoods have been completely messed up by all of this construction.
You really hope that by the time this is eventually finished, and we don't know when that will be right now, although Metrolinx did confirm last week that it will not be this year, you hope that when it is done, we will have a beautiful, functional, gleaming light rail transit line, something that has been promised for many years now, and that when it's finally up and running, the growing pains will have been forgotten. But at the moment, we cannot see the finish line right now, and the whole process just casts a lot of doubts on the ability of both the private sector and the government to complete big projects on time and on budget.
Well, let's get some more reaction to all of that. We asked for Transportation Minister Caroline Mulroney to join us here on the pod. Her office declined. So we put out an invitation to the official opposition critic for the Greater Toronto Area. That's Butila Carpoche. She'll be joining us. She represents Parkdale High Park in the legislature for the New Democrats.
Butila Carpoche, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
From the NDP's perspective, what has gone so wrong with the Eglinton Crosstown?
Well, let's lay out what we know so far. And that is, so far, we have 12 plus years of construction, $13 billion so far and counting. We don't know the final price tag on this. Hundreds and hundreds of small businesses impacted, hurt. Over 400 businesses in Little Jamaica and Midtown Forestry shut down. You know, this is people's livelihoods that were impacted. And we still don't have a credible plan or a timeline from Crosslinks as to when the project will finish and when can we expect to, have the Eglinton Crosstown running. So I think that this project really has gone horribly wrong because we have signed a contract using the public-private partnership model, the P3, which does not allow for accountability measures. There's a lack of transparency. And so we also are dealing with a government and a transportation agency that is not overseeing and enforcing the contract properly. And, you know, people of Toronto, of Ontario, are left with nothing at the end of the day.
Well, let me pick up the questioning there, because the government, which we indicated in the intro, is declining to give us an interview about this. So I'm going to paraphrase what I think their position is. And I think their position is they're as frustrated as everybody here, that they are dealing with an uncooperative contractor, that there are some things happening on this project that are beyond their control, no matter how much oversight you brought to bear. Do they have a point at all?
Well, the Liberal government, when they signed the contract with Crosslinks, obviously, you know, seems to have signed a very bad contract. So I don't want to let the Liberal government off the hook. But this government has been in power for the last 5 years. In 2018, when they came to power, the Auditor General had put out a report that highlighted and gave warnings as to, you know, some of the issues with this project. And what did the government do since 2018 when they came to power? Did they go to Metrolinx and say, you know, these are the things that the Auditor General has pointed out? Did they ask questions? Did they ask the agency to, enforce the contract? Because the Auditor General said that despite everything, that, you know, there are and were some tools that Metrolinx could use to enforce the contract, but they failed to do so. And 2 years later, in 2020, when the Auditor General released her follow-up report, again said that the issues that were raised in 2018 were not addressed, ongoing problems. In fact, the problems were getting worse. And really, 5 years later, we have seen no real action from both Metrolinx and from the Minister of Transportation on this, on trying to get a control of this project.
For the record, Crosslinx has said that they are dealing with what they call unreasonable change orders from the TTC that are preventing them from finishing the train line. Now, you know, obviously lots of different accusations and allegations flying here. You mentioned the Auditor General reports there. I mean, do you have any sense of what the facts are here and what's true? Because honestly, some days I'm pretty confused.
I know. And this is part of the problem. You know, the inherent nature of P3 contracts is that these are quite opaque structures. There is very little transparency. There are very little accountability mechanisms. And unless, you know, certain milestones are hit, and if those are missed, those are the only opportunities to really get a sense of what is going on. But regardless, what we do know is that years ago, Crosslinx, again, pointed the finger at the TTC and, sued the government for essentially more money. And Metrolinx CEO negotiated the settlement. The Auditor General in her report said that that was not needed, that, you know, the delays were because of deficient design by Crosslinx. And but even despite that settlement, where they got more money out of the public purse, again, there was no proper enforcement of that negotiated settlement to complete the project. So we're dealing with all of these issues, and we're also dealing with a Minister of Transportation and an office that continues to withhold information from the public. And we know this because time and time again, the minister's office has rejected efforts from even the public sector, from the public servant side, to tell the public more about what is going on with Eglinton Crosstown. We only find out issues, you know, find out what's going on either through FOI documents or, you know, a random person walking along a street and seeing newly built stations like at Sloan Station being ripped out. You know, so it's really problematic that even the most basic of things, which is information about what is going on, is being withheld from the public. They at least deserve to have answers on what exactly is going on and if this project will ever open.
Buthila, we do want to go on to talk about the developments in Peel region with you, but one more thing on this LRT story before we go on to that. And that is, I want to circle back to something you said earlier. You said this whole mess is in some respects a reflection on the P3 process, the public-private partnerships that the previous Liberal government entered into with the Metrolinx and the private sector consortium that's building this thing, and which the current government also supports, the P3 process. I just want to understand that better because, you know, as I think we all know, governments don't build these systems. They have to contract with the private sector to build them because they've got the expertise to do them. So how would, if the NDP had been in power, how would this thing have rolled out any differently?
Well, Steve, we used to know how to build things, and we have built things before. We've built public transit, the Yonge Line, the Bloor Line, and somewhere along the way, some people decided that instead of building the way we've always done it, we're going to use some complex financial structures and this narrative that the public doesn't know how to deliver, the private will deliver. I mean, the public has a history of doing it and doing it right. The private does not. And so with this P3 model, what is essentially happening in the simplest of terms is a mix of the public and the private in a way where the costs and the responsibilities are on borne by the public, and all of the benefit is for the private side. You know, so if you really want to sum it up, this model, this P3, really was an invention of the private sector to get into something that they don't know very much about or not very good at, as we have seen time and time again, the Ottawa LRT, the Eglinton LRT, purely for the purposes of profit. And it's backed by government. And there's zero accountability for delivery. There's no transparency. So there are certain things that the private sector is good at, of course, but there are certain things that only the public can deliver properly, like vital public infrastructure. Just the way, you know, healthcare, education is what the public has a history of doing. Public knows how to deliver, and you always center the needs of people, and profit is not the motivation. We have transit in this province, in this city. It has been built. Why can't we just continue with that?
Okay, let's go on and talk about Peel Region, because you are the GTA critic for the NDP. It looks like there's going to be a divorce in Peel Region, and the constituent municipalities are going to break up, and they're going to figure something else out. They're giving themselves 2.5 years to figure all that out. Your leader said in the Legislative Assembly the other day that the residents there can't trust this government to deliver the divorce properly. Why do you say that?
That's because we have seen time and again the government moving forward on big decisions, major decisions impacting municipalities, impacting the residents of these municipalities in a way that does not consult with the people of the region, that does not take into consideration the financial implications, as we have seen with Bill 23. The government took away the ability of municipalities to collect development charges, said that they would make municipalities whole, and didn't, basically. So this is something that the government has a track record of doing poorly, and there has been nothing done by the government to inspire confidence that with the breakup of the Peel region, it's going to be done in a way that is equitable, that will not hurt the residents of Peel at the end of the day.
I'm wondering if you think that even the basic project here of breaking up Peel region, do you think that's a mistake?
Well, I think that really it is up to the people of Peel to decide what their future looks like. What we want to ensure is that if there is a breakup, that it's done in an equitable manner. We are talking about three municipalities with differing needs, with growing population, with a long history of working together. And so you are going to deal with many things as part of the separation that is not straightforward. You know, we're not only talking about infrastructure and assets, we're talking about liabilities, we're talking about public services that people depend on a daily basis. Right now, as the mayor of Brampton, Patrick Brown, has said, Brampton stands to lose over $1 billion. And that would mean an 80% increase in property tax in the middle of an affordability crisis. We really just have to ensure that it's done in a way that at the end of the day, no municipality is left with the short end of the stick. And municipalities need to be made whole.
Butila Karpoche, MPP for Parkdale High Park and GTA critic for the official opposition. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks, Butila.
Thank you both.
That is the On Poly podcast for this May 23rd, 2023. Please remember to check out our newsletters. You can subscribe at tvo.org/newsletters. This week, given that we've just come through the holiday weekend, JMM and I are riffing on getting ready for the summer and what are some of the best places in the province of Ontario to visit if you've got summer vacation plans, which I suspect this weekend people are now starting to set their minds to. So we hope you'll read that.
Any feedback you have, we are happy to hear it, good, bad, or indifferent. Write us an email at onpolitics@tvo.org. Here's an Apple Podcast review from listener Veblen Canuck, who writes, Steve Paikin is the best, and JMM is a fantastic sidekick. This podcast, full of facts and context without being too self-congratulatory. And Steve is exactly 2 days older than me. June babies rule. Well, I have two objections. One,
uh-oh.
Sidekick, we're going to have to work on my job description here. Secondly, as a February baby, I'm being offended on multiple levels here.
Well, let the record show it was Mr. Canuck who called you my sidekick, not me. I have only ever considered you an equal partner in this marriage, my friend. There you go.
But divorce is one of the topics of the day, so.
We'll leave the divorce to Peel. You and I are still together.
We're still good.
A reminder, everybody, if you send us an email to onpolitics@tvo.org with a screenshot of your review, you can win our On Poly Sweepstakes. That's my John Turner book, just out a few months ago, so we hope you'll do that.
This week's episode was produced and edited by Matthew O'Mara. Our managing editor is Shahryar Tejvidi.
Production support from Carla Lucetta and Jonathan Halliwell. Until next Tuesday, everybody, bye-bye.